God bless you. Welcome to session 14 of Acts, the Expansion of the Church. Tonight's session is going to be about the shipwreck, almost shipwrecked, from Acts 27. But I thought that I would also put a subtitle on this one called Prayer Changes Things. So turn in your Bibles to Acts 27. We're going to be pretty much here the whole time. And we're starting in verse 1. And Festus commanded concerning him that he should be sent to Caesar to Italy. And he delivered Paul and other prisoners with him to a certain man, a centurion from the Augustan cohort, whose name was Julius. This was a centurion from the Augustan band. A band was about 400 to 600 soldiers. And this was probably a small portion of that cohort. And the centurion was named Julius, who, as we will see, and as we read the story, was a really wonderful man and was very kind and very caring of Paul during this entire time. So verse 2, and when it was ready to sail, so all of a sudden now Luke joins them here. We went down to a ship that was from the city of Adramyttium and was traveling to the region of Asia. And Aristarchus, a Macedonian who was from the city of Thessalonica, came on the ship with us. So from this verse, we learn that Luke is with Paul and Aristarchus, who is from Thessalonica, is also with Paul on this ship and on the journey to Rome. Now, I hope you've downloaded a map that I had put on the live stream website as well as on the Light of the Word website, because we are starting from Caesarea. And this is where this ship is going, and it is going to Asia Minor. So you can follow the whole discussion of this trip on the map. So we're starting in Caesarea. On the next day, verse 3, we arrived at Sidon. Okay, Sidon is in Phoenicia, which is the north part of Israel, north of Israel. And on this map that I have printed, it just has a little S that stands for Sidon. And it's about 67 miles north of Caesarea. So let's see what happens inside it. And the centurion treated Paul with compassion. Oh, that's so wonderful. And allowed him to go to his friends and to be refreshed. So he allowed him to go to his friends and perhaps get supplies and some necessary things so that the journey could be a little bit easier. I mean, he had just spent 2 years in prison in Caesarea, and he would have some freedom, but not very much. And so we see that the believers here in Sidon, his friends, is what it says, they refreshed him. And they probably gave him supplies and money and caring and things that he needed. So he's encouraged as he first goes on this journey that there's going to be provision for him. So verse 4 says, and we sailed from there, and because the winds were contrary to us, we followed a course near Cyprus. The winds were from the west and northwest. So if you see the map here, and the winds are coming from the northwest down, so they're contrary to the way the boat wants to go, because the boat wants to go east, right? So instead of going straight across, which they would do in good weather, they go under, it's called under the lee of Cyprus. And under the lee is a nautical term that means against the wind. So you put the land between the wind, the land, and then the boat, so that the land will break up the wind and allow the boat to travel easier. And much of this description of the journey to Rome is filled with nautical terms and with detailed description of how the boat went, what it looked like, what's going to happen to it. So we are following this outline of exactly how Luke is describing it, and he's putting so many details in it. And we're going to see why, I think, at the end of it, when we read through the entire record. But there were many other records in the book of Acts that we had just skimmed over, where months are just described in two verses. And yet this voyage is described in very, very great detail. So verse 5, we crossed over the Sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia and arrived at the city of Myra of Lycia. So Myra is in Asia Minor. And Myra had a great harbor there, as well as it was famous for the grain business. And a port where ships would come in and then be sent to Rome with grain to feed the empire that was centered in Rome. So Myra is not a small city. That's where the ship from the city of Adramyttium that they first go on, it lands at Myra, and then they're going to change ships here. And there the centurion found a ship from Alexandria that was traveling to Italy, and they settled us on it. It is a grain ship. This is a bigger ship, and we will learn later that there's 276 people on board this ship. So it's a much bigger ship. All right, verse 7. And because we were sailing under heavy seas, after many days we barely reached the island of Cnidus. Okay, look at the map. You see he's not very far from Myra to Cnidus up the coast. Cnidus is like the western point of Asia Minor, the farthest west in Asia Minor. So they're going between the island of Rhodes and Cnidus, and it took them many days, what should have taken only one day. Mm-hmm. And it's because the seas are heavy, and verse 7 goes on, and because the wind did not allow us to proceed by a straight course, we kept a heading near Crete towards the city of Salmone. Oh, all right. So instead of trying to go into the Aegean Sea, they go under Crete again. So it's describing it again as under the lee of Crete. They go past the northernmost point of Crete, which is called Salmone, and around the southern part of Crete, where the wind would be blowing from the northwest across the land, and they could get into the harbor at Lycia. Verse 9, and we were there a long time, even until the day of the fast of the Judeans was past. And it was dangerous for anyone to travel by sea. And Paul counseled them and said, men, I perceive that our voyage will occur with calamity and with much loss, not only of the cargo of our ship, but also of our own lives. So when it says the fast is past, it's talking about the Feast of Tabernacles, which was in mid to late September. And so this is early October, and the time when it was really unsafe to travel in the Mediterranean Sea was from about mid-October to mid-March. And you just didn't go out into the open sea unless you were willing to risk having some weather or heavy seas or the winds to be against you. So far, the winds have been from the north and west, all right? And so they're in Crete, and Paul says, I perceive. That's a very typical way of saying that he got revelation. It's one way that the word describes revelation. And it says, he says, men, I perceive that our voyage will occur with calamity and with much loss, not only of the cargo, but also of our own lives. Now, we are going to see that that actually did not come to pass. They did lose the cargo and the ship, but not the people's lives. But this was the first revelation that Paul got. And as I said, what the subtitle of this was, is prayer changes things. And so that's what we're going to see. And also that there's going to be a miraculous intervention of God to change this revelation right here. So the centurion listened to the shipmaster and the captain of the ship rather than the words of Paul. Da, 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 da. And because that port was not suitable to winter in foul weather, many of us wanted to travel from there and, if possible, to reach and winter in a certain port that was in Crete and was called Phoenice and look to the south. If you look on your map, you see that Phoenice is just a little bit farther over on the island of Crete. And it obviously was, it's probably only about 35 miles from where they were. But it faced the south, and so it would be protected, the harbor, the ship would be protected in the harbor from all of the winds coming either from the northwest or from the northeast, where the majority of the weather was in the Mediterranean. So that's where they wanted to winter. Verse 13 says, after the south wind blew, and they thought that we would arrive according to their desire, they followed a course on the side of Crete. All right, so a south wind is a good wind, right? Because a south wind will take them directly up the coast. They can hug the coast and not go out into the Mediterranean. And just go those 35 miles to Phoenice. So they think that they have a plan and that this will all work out. But now, shortly after we left, a sudden blast of wind came on us that was called a Typhoon Euroclydon. And the ship was caught up and was not able to bear up against the wind, and we yielded control of it. So first of all, it was a typhoon, meaning the winds were going around, whipping around so that the waves would be going in all different directions, right? But the Euroclydon, or sometimes it's called Euroquilo, and it's a combined words of north and east. So it's a northeaster. It's winds coming down off of Crete and off the mainland across Crete and stirring up the whole Mediterranean Sea, because it's hitting the warm air that's coming up from the south, and this nor'easter is coming down, and it just stirred up a giant typhoon. And immediately they could not control the ship. So it was so sudden how this happened. Here they're just thinking, oh, we're just going to go up the coast. This would be a real nice day trip, right? And and this wind comes down, and just really, it's called like a whirlwind in the sky. And that's what causes the boat to just not be able to control it at all. So verse 16 says, we passed by a certain island that was called Clauda. Sometimes it's called Clauda with an L, Clauda. And we were hardly able to keep hold of the longboat. There was a boat that they would tow behind the ship, and usually it was in the water. So they were not able to even hold on to the longboat. And after we had taken it up on board, we undergirded and prepared the ship. And because we were afraid lest we should fall in the downward rapids of the sea, we pulled down the sail, and so we drifted. Mm-hmm. Now there's several things that happen right here. And you can see how it begins to be God's intervention. Because this little tiny island of Kata is right by Crete there, right? Mm-hmm. So they had this very, very brief period of time where the wind was coming across the island, and they would be protected enough to do several things. So the first things that they did was they hauled the longboat on the deck and fastened it, and then they took ropes and undergirded the ship. They would thread the ropes all the way under the hull and up over it and secure them as tight as possible so that it would, when the ship started leaking, which it probably already had with the pressure of the winds on it, that it would hold the hull together. So they had this really small window of time, this tiny island, to do this. They took down the sails, and then they went, they turned the nose of the ship to the north, so that that was the only way that it could not blow directly down to the African coast. And if you look on your map right here, this indentation right here of, on the African coast was called Syrtis, and it had very bad quicksands. So that's what it's talking about here, the downward rapids of the sea. If they had just let the boat go in the direction that the wind was pushing it, it would have gone directly into those quicksands and would have totally destroyed the ship and everyone on it. So they had this very, very small window of time where they could do these things, take down the sail, take care of the boat, undergird the ship. And then they said, all right, we're going to drift. Verse 18. And as the violent storm raged against us, the next day we threw goods in the sea. So anything extra that they didn't need, they started throwing it in the sea. And the third day we cast overboard the ship's own riggings with our hands. What they cast into the sea was just things that they didn't need, so that it would lighten it, so it would sit higher in the water, so it wouldn't be battered. Because in this kind of a storm, the hull would be going down and up, and you would be hitting the water. And then the wind blowing it across, the ship is turned north, and yet the wind is pushing it to the west. So can you pretty much assume that at this point, Paul, Luke, and Aristarchus are starting to pray really big time, right? Mm-hmm. This is the third day already, and they're thinking, how can we drink water? How can we eat? What's going to happen to the ship? Because if it's out in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea, and the storm is preventing them from seeing any stars or having any way to guide the ship at all, they don't know where they are, and they don't know where they're going. So it's time to pray. Verse 20, and as the tempest continued more days, all right, we already have 3 days, and the sun was not visible, nor the moon, nor the stars, all hope of our living was completely cut off. I mean, there was no hope. In a storm like that, the ship would be turning and then turning back, and you would totally lose what direction you were going in. They didn't even know whether they were still pointed north or not. And that's where the miracle of this starts happening. You start to really get this picture where when they were praying and they were focusing on God's answer to them, what we are going to see is that God just guided that ship from the island of Clauda all the way across the Mediterranean, going like this, to the island of Malta. But it took 14 days. Verse 21, and as no one had eaten anything, then Paul stood up among them and said, if you had been persuaded by me, men, we would not have sailed from Crete, and we would have been spared from loss and from this calamity. So he's kind of going, you know, I told you so. But now that we're here, we are all in danger of losing our lives. Because remember, that's the revelation he has, right? But he also has a promise from God from before that he is going to preach the word in Rome, and that he was supposed to be going to Rome, right? he has that promise and then he has this revelation. So you can see a conflict. So you can also see how he has to just really stay his mind. All right? God, there is a way out of this. Please help us. Verse 22. And now I counsel that you should be without distress, for not one of you will be destroyed, but only the ship. The revelation changed just like that. And this is what happened. For there appeared to me in this night an angel of that God whose I am and whom I serve. And he said to me, fear not, Paul, for it is prepared for you to stand before Caesar. And behold, God has given to you as a gift all who sail with you. This is amazing. One of the really outstanding things about this record is that if Luke had died in this shipwreck, we would not have the book of Acts or the Gospel of Luke, because they hadn't been written yet. We would also not have many of the greatest epistles that have ever been written. And we would not have Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, Philemon, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, and probably Hebrews. We would not have any of those books in our Bible if Paul and Luke had died in this shipwreck. So God was, he had a lot to do to get them to be able to get out of this mess. So it's just astounding that an angel comes and appears to Paul just so he will know for sure that this revelation that he had gotten before is going to be changed. Verse 25, because of this, be encouraged, men, for I believe in God that it will be so even as it was communicated to me. Nevertheless, we have to be thrown on a certain island. He didn't have any idea what island. The angel just told him they were going to go onto an island. Isn't that wonderful how God really encouraged him so that he was able to turn around and encourage everyone else on the ship? This is how I know that it was 14 days. Verse 27, after 14 days that we were wandering and were buffeted in the Adriatic Sea, at midnight, the sailors thought that they were coming near land. Oh, so look at your map. Now, on this map, it just this very straight course. Mm-hmm. And what I would have done was I would have made it like jiggly line like this, because they probably were going up and down. But people have gone and retraced this, the steps of this ship, and if you calculate how many miles it is from Clada to the island of Malta, it is 476 miles, and in order to get there at a semi-straight course, you go 8 degrees north. So the wind was pushing them the exact way so that they could arrive at that island. It's not really possible. Sense knowledge-wise, that's why you know that God had to intervene in this whole situation. So it was midnight, right? And the sailors thought that they were coming near land. So they were getting near to some kind of land, but they still could not see. They could not see the moon. They didn't know where the stars were, so they didn't know what island they might be coming towards. And, oh, and the other thing, if you look on the map, that is the only island between there and the African coast that they could have. The last island below Italy is Malta. So if they had not hit that island, they would have kept on going through the Straits of Gibraltar, right? All right. So we've got to go back to the record here. All right, they put out the anchors and found 20 fathoms. And again, they went forward a little and they found 15 fathoms. All right, so it's obvious that they are getting near to land. But what land? Verse 29, and being afraid lest we should found the places where there were rocks, they put out four anchors from the stern of the ship and prayed that it would be day. Mm-hmm. So that all the people are starting to pray along with Luke, Aristarchus, and Paul. Because now they've seen, they heard what he said, and they're grabbing onto it, saying, Paul's saying, well, God has given all of you to me as a gift, if you listen to what I say. So they put out anchors on the stern so that the boat will not continue to go towards the land and just get stuck on the rocks. Verse 30, now the sailors tried to flee from the ship, and they lowered the longboat to the sea on the pretext that they would go in it to secure the ship on the land. That's kind of a false pretense, huh? And Paul, seeing this, said to the centurion and to the soldiers, if these do not remain in the ship, you will not be able to be saved. So then the soldiers cut off the ropes of the longboat from the ship and allowed it to go adrift. But Paul, when it was almost daybreak, convinced all of them to take some nourishment, saying to them, behold, today it has been 14 days since you have eaten anything on account of the danger. Because of this, I beg you to take food for the strengthening of your life, for not a hair from the head of any of you will be hurt. Can you imagine what great comfort and encouragement that would have been to these people? They had no hope of being rescued. They had no hope of the ship surviving. The ship must have sprung many leaks by this time and was tilted over because of being against the wind. It was carrying grain, so the ship, being pointed north, the winds were coming from the east. And then because it was leaning, right, the grain would have shifted over to one side, and the whole ship would have been leaning and springing leaks all over the place, probably only staying together because of those ropes. So they're close enough to land, like, there's hope. All right, now let's see what's going to happen. And as he said these things, verse 35, he took bread and praised God before all of them, and he broke the bread and began to eat. He's praising God before the rescue happens, which is a really great principle about prayer. When prayer changes things, you get new revelation and then new direction of exactly which way to go. Verse 37, now there were 276 people in the ship. 276 people who would have died had Paul and Luke and Aristarchus not been praying. Verse 38, and when they were satisfied with the food, they lightened the ship and took the wheat and threw it in the sea. So up until this time, the grain was still on the ship. So they took all the grain and they threw it in the sea so that the ship would get turned right again and it would be lightened. And what they're thinking is that it'll be light enough and sit high enough in the water that they'll be able to go towards the island. Verse 39, and when it was day, the sailors did not recognize what land it was, but they saw by the shore of the dry land a certain bay of the sea where they thought that if possible they could thrust the ship. There is a bay on the island of Malta that is called St. Paul's Bay. And it is on the northeast side of the island where they would have been coming past this point where they could have heard the breakers and then seen a bay that opened up, a very small little bay, but that they could put the ship in. Verse 40, and they cut off the anchors from the ship and they left them in the sea and they released the bands of the rudders and hoisted the small sail to the wind that was blowing, and they proceeded toward the dry land. So they had enough of a sail to put up so that it would push the ship into the bay. And the ship struck on a place that was high between two deep parts of the sea, and it was stuck on it. And the forward part of it stayed on it and was not to be moved, but the back part of it was broken to pieces by the violence of the waves. So here they are, they're so close to the land, and that particular bay on the island of Malta has a lot of silt, and there's two parts of it where there's heavy clay and heavy silt, and when they were going into it, that's what the ship got stuck on, was in this heavy clay. So the front part of the ship is stuck in the clay, and the back part of the ship starts breaking up because of the waves. Verse 42, and the soldiers wanted to kill the prisoners so that they would not jump in swimming and would escape from them. And the centurion prevented them from this because he wanted to save Paul. And those who were able to jump in swimming, he commanded to swim first and to pass over to the land. And the rest crossed over on boards and on other wood pieces of the ship. And so all of them escaped safely to the land. Divine intervention. It's just an amazing record of how prayer came to pass and what it contributed, but also about how with such minute detail, God was just watching over that ship so that they could get to the island. So, will not God intervene in our storms of life? That's the question of the hour. Now let's see what happens on the island. Verse 1 of chapter 28. Afterwards, they learned that the island was called Melita, or Malta. And the barbarians who were living on it showed us many kindnesses, and they kindled a fire and called to all of us that we should warm ourselves because there was a great rain and it was cold. Duh, yeah, it was a great rain. The rain kept on going. And Paul picked up a large bundle of sticks and placed them on the fire, and a viper came out of them because of the heat of the fire and bit his hand. And when the barbarians saw that it was hanging on his hand, they said, perhaps this man is a murderer, so that even though he was rescued from the sea, justice will not allow him to live. But Paul shook his hand and threw the viper in the fire, and it did not harm him. Now the barbarians expected that immediately he would swell up and fall dying on the ground. So he survived the shipwreck, but only to be bitten by a viper. But after they had waited a long time and saw that it did not harm him, they changed their words and said, he is a god. Now there were fields in that place that belonged to a certain man whose name was Publius, who was the ruler of the island, and he gladly received us in his house for 3 days. And we find out later that Publius' father was sick, and Paul heals him. And the people of the island take care of them for 3 months until it's later in the middle of February when the seas become calm enough to go up the coast through where the boot of Italy is, and then on the way all the way to Rome. When we get words like Paul did, where the angel came to him, you know, that was certainly a phenomenon that the angel came and appeared to him. But they gave him specific words that everyone would survive. Only the ship would be lost and only the cargo, and that you have to go to a certain island. So it gave the enough detail in the revelation and enough of words of encouragement for Paul to really hold on to it and say, I trust that what God says to me is going to come to pass. And if you listen to these words too, then you will be encouraged. And that's what we have to be able to share with people whenever there are storms and different situations in our lives, where we can come and really give the words of encouragement that God gives to us, and then it will affect so many other people. There's one last little part I want to read to you, and I'm going to read it from a book called The Life of St. Paul. And it's about when he arrives in Rome and is coming on the ship to where they drop them off on land, and then he's going by land from the coast to Rome. It says, "At length the dangers of the deep were left behind, and Paul found himself approaching the capital of the Roman world by the Appian Way, the great highway by which Rome was entered by travelers from the east. The bustle and noise increased as he neared the city, and the signs of Roman grandeur and renown multiplied at every step. For many years, he had been looking forward to seeing Rome." He had. "But he had always thought of entering it in a very different guise from that which he now was. He had always thought of Rome as a successful general thinks of the central stronghold of the country he is subduing, who looks eagerly forward to the day when he will direct the charge against its gates." I mean, Rome is the capital, right? Paul was engaged in the conquest of the world for Christ, and Rome was the final position he had hoped to carry in his master's name. Years ago, he had sent to it the famous challenge when he wrote the book of Romans. He says, "I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes." That's what he wrote in Romans. But now, when he found himself actually at its gates and thought of the abject condition in which he was, old, gray-haired, broken, a chained prisoner just escaped from a shipwreck, his heart sank within him, and he felt dreadfully alone. At the right moment, however, a little incident took place which restored him. Believers, Christians from Rome, came 40 miles outside of Rome, where they met with him and, hearing of his approach, had come out to welcome him. And then 10 miles farther on, he came upon another group who had come out for the same purpose. The sight of these brethren and their interest in him completely revived him. He thanked God and took courage. His old feelings came back in their strength, and when in the company of these friends, he reached that shoulder of the hills from which the first view of the city is obtained, his heart swelled with the anticipation of victory, for he knew he carried in his heart the force which would yet lead captive that proud capital. Let's end by reading Acts 28. Verse 15. "And when the brothers who were there heard of our coming, they went out to meet us as far as the square that was called the Appii Forum, and as far as the Three Taverns." Those were the two cities. "And when Paul saw them, he gave thanks to God and was strengthened." King James says he took courage. He was strengthened in his heart to go forward from this point. And next week, we're going to be looking at prison outreach, because even though he was in prison and it's still in captivity, God had provided so many things for him to be able to preach the word at Rome, rescued him through that amazing storm, and brought him all the way to the capital of the Roman Empire. God bless you.